notoriously hard because, like, we're creative people, right? And we're not, we don't want to be the center of attention, but we do. It's super weird.
Yeah, I have a hard time calling myself a musician, mostly because, like, one person once told me I was not a musician, really, like, at a show that I was playing.
No.
I won't name them, but yeah. I don't know if I think a little bit differently, but yeah.
That's fair.
I totally lost my train of thought already. I'm not going to blank out every time.
Oh, fuck that person, though. That's mean. Also, we're here with Dirt Bike Boyfriend, the one, the only. The one and only Dirt Bike Boyfriend. Brett, your name is Brett. Brett, I don't know your last name.
Holland.
Holland. Brett, yes. Holland. That's a badass name.
Son of the great Paul Holland.
Yeah, I like it. Dirt Bike Boyfriend. All right, so we're here with the one, the only Dirt Bike Boyfriend, Brett Holland, out of Duluth, Minnesota. This drink and this squeaky chair are going to drive me nuts. I'll figure something out. But, you hear that?
Yeah.
That's Dude, loud. That's going to be brutal. I might stand. I might have to stand. Just stand over you. Hang on. I'm keeping all of this in, by the way.
Okay, fantastic.
People can deal with it on their own time. What's up? Does it feel awkward when I'm, like, towering? Like
no,
this?
No, I kind of like it.
All right, good. I'm glad.
It's imposing. I like being under pressure.
Just somebody talking literally down to you as you're having an interview. All right, well, we are here with the one, the only Dirt Bike Boyfriend, Brett Holland. Brett, thanks for coming on the show, first of all.
Yes, thank you, Grant. Glad. One of the podcasters of all time with Jeremy Bohm.
Yeah.
Some guy in West Duluth that I met that does Dungeons and Dragons in his mom's attic.
Okay, well, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, he's a cool guy. He was actually very nice.
Yeah, I believe
Scott,
it.
I think is his name.
Do you play Dungeons and Dragons?
No, I have played Dungeons and Dragons one time, and I hated it.
What did you hate about it?
I can't do fantasy stuff, really.
I was having a conversation with someone the other day. They asked me to go see Dune, and they're like, do you like sci-fi? And I'm like, sci-fi is fine. I don't like castles.
Castles?
I don't know how to explain.
I can watch a movie, but I can't really act.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Get into, like, the character and the whole thing.
Yeah, I have a tough time.
That's fair. All right. Well, aside from Dungeons and Dragons, you are a musician, even if you have trouble calling yourself a musician.
Yes, indeed.
Yes, you make music. You the thing that I like about your stuff, Brett. Should I call you Dirt Bike or should I call you Brett for the whole interview?
You can call me whatever you want. There's a lot of people that have just called me Dirt Bike.
Really?
I accept it.
That's kind of the most badass nickname.
It's pretty cool.
That's pretty cool.
One time, just a short story, at a show, someone broke a string on their guitar and I ran and grabbed mine and just handed it. And then I grabbed their guitar and I was restringing it. And someone turned back to me and yelled, "Hey, Dirt Bike." And I looked up and I got like a thumbs up and I was just like,
dude,
yes.
Dude.
I'm the coolest guy in the world.
You found a loophole to give yourself a cool nickname.
Yes. I'm pretty sure I gave it to myself. I mean, there might be someone out there who's really angry at me that I say that all the time and they gave it to me or something, but I'm pretty sure I came up with it myself based off the phonetics of car seat headrest. So Dirt Bike Boyfriend, car seat headrest.
Oh, dude, I dig it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I dig it, Dirt
That's
Bike.
That's a secret.
There's
a place in Minneapolis called Football Pizza,
yeah,
which I think is pretty much the exact same
Football
thing.
Pizza, Dirt Bike Boyfriend. Oh, I get it. Yeah. So it just has the same ring to it, rolls off the tongue.
Yeah.
Okay, that's actually the main thing that I was going to talk about. You're a musician, but one of the things that you are hidden underneath the music, it's not even hidden, is a poet, really.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
A poet, and I didn't even know it.
Yeah, you did know it, though. Oh, yeah. All your songs are so lyrical, and they all have such a message to them, which is pretty incredible, because I'm usually turned off by music with, like, a message.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know how to describe this. Not a message, but... even when I agree with it, do you know Jason Isbell?
Yes.
Yeah. I talked about this with Ross.
Yeah, I did. I was listening
yeah.
to that, your interview with, and you mentioned it in Shogi too.
Yeah.
You don't like a polarizing message.
Yes.
And I think some of my songs are a little bit polarizing. And when you said that, I started kind of getting a little analytical about the ones that I was thinking about playing today.
Dude, when I used to do this as a radio show, I could get away with saying shit and then nobody would be able to go back and check the things that I said. But now it's all on record. So I forget about that. But no, I guess I don't know how to describe it, but the polarizing thing is, like, I don't mind people standing on business and, like, this is where I stand, this is what I'm saying, this is what I'm about. It's when it feels like pandery to me on either side that I start to get a little bit like, the world doesn't really need this. Yeah. You know, Masters of War, great song. White Man's World, good message, not a great song. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, I can agree with the message and not, like, enjoy the song.
I think I try to mostly just write from my own perspective. So if it comes off like that, then that's good, I suppose.
Yeah, that's fair. Well, all right, let's go back a little bit. So how'd you get into writing songs? How old were you when this all started?
Ooh, so that's a interesting question. So I, musically, this kind of project started about 4 years ago. I started playing shows 2 years ago. But I started writing songs. I picked up guitar 4 years ago as the first instrument I ever learned how to play. But I was writing what I would say were songs when I was like 10 years old in my Ooh. Phone notes app, like all the time.
Yeah.
Like ever since then, I would hate to like go back through all those old phones and like look terrible.
Oh, man.
But I took a class at UMD with Elizabeth Nelson called Communication and Creativity, something along those lines. The final project was to do some sort of art project that you had never done before and present it in front of the class. And I'm like, I just wanted to write a song, whatever.
Cool.
So I just grabbed a shitty guitar. I wrote a shitty song. It's terrible. Never, never, ever, ever will it be released. But then from that point on, you know, someone kind of encouraged me. And I went home and I started learning how to play guitar. And then 2 years later, finally, I had an opportunity to play a show. And it's kind of...
And here we are.
Yeah, yeah.
I love it.
Kept rolling ever since.
Damn, that's awesome. Okay, so this just kind of came about because... Well, let's go back to the notepads when you were 10. Were you writing things with the intent of them? Like, I know it's hard to recall like a 10-year-old mind, but like, did you think this is a song at the time? Were you like, I'm just putting words down for fun? Or like,
no,
what did you kind of think?
It was a song, yeah. No, yeah. I loved, so I was obsessed with rap music my entire life. Like, when I was like way too young, a tiny child, 3 years old, 5 years old, whatever, at my grandma's house, we would watch like VH1 and MTV all day.
Yeah.
And I just got like obsessed with rap music, cause I was predominantly what they played on MTV in the middle of the day.
True.
And so I was writing rap songs like all the time, but like I was like a little kid from suburban Minnesota that played hockey and raced dirt bikes and whatever. Like,
yeah,
no one wanted to hear my rap songs. My friends from school who rapped didn't want to hear my rap songs. So I never became a rapper. I don't know if you've listened, but there is one rap song that I have released.
I haven't heard this one.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
What's the name of it?
It's called More Pizza.
More Pizza?
Yes.
All right. Is it on Bandcamp?
It's actually on my newest album that's available everywhere.
Ooh, tell me more.
So Blue 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 is the name of the album. That's name is kind of derived from the opening cover song, which is True Blue by Bright Eyes. And I wanted to name it Blue, Blue, Green, Blue, Blue, but I thought like, that's too much of a mouthful and like, I can't paint an album cover that looks like that. So,
fair.
So I went with Blue, Blue, Blue. And then, when I was putting the album together, I almost hesitate to call it an album. It's almost just like a 18 song EP or something like that.
I get what you mean. Yeah.
You know, like I started with an idea for like a 6-song album and then I recorded probably 6 extra songs. And then I looked through at, what I had recorded and I went, you know, in the past and I went, oh, well that song should go on the album and that song should go on the album. And all of a sudden it was like 16 and I'm like, well, there's one more song I really want to do. And you know, it just ended up that way.
It works because all your stuff has a very thematic through line to it, you know?
Someone told me I like sequenced the album really well. It like works perfectly. And I was like, I just threw it down. Like there is no, I listened through it and I made sure I liked how it went.
Yeah.
But like there wasn't like a long session of like trying to figure it out or whatever.
I'm sure though there was some subconscious stuff though. Because if you're sequencing it, you probably start with one. And the first song that comes to mind is probably like one of your favorites. Right? He's already there.
Bro, someone, I listen to people way too much.
Yeah.
I act like I don't listen to anyone, but I listen to everything everyone ever says to me. So like one time someone told me like, every set, you know, you play your second best song at the first song and you play your best song at the end.
Yeah.
And then I like started kind of realizing most of my favorite albums are kind of like that too.
Yep.
And I'm like, oh shit, that's how I should kind of stage it. So that's kind of how it is. And then I made this really, really whack beat on my iPad on a drum machine, and I put that at the end of the album, so that's not necessarily true of the newest album. But I made that, there's a little bit of a story to that. I made that when I was sitting on a futon in a friend's house while I was staying over on a city's trip, like a mini tour. I wanted two shows in the cities. And I just, you know, you make something, and even if it sucks, when you know it sucks when you listen to it, and you're just like, people got
to
hear this.
Yeah, this has to be out. This has to exist in the world.
Yeah.
I get that. I've been there. Except for I always like have that narcissistic thought of like, oh, this is great. This shit I made is great. And then I listen to it 2 years later. I'm like, oh, that was bad.
Yeah. It's been a journey of that too. Of, you know, I put my first thing, everything I put out is self-recorded.
Oh, that's incredible.
And like, it's cool. Yeah. But, you know, in retrospect, like, there's some songs that I wish I wouldn't have put out almost. Like, I love every song I put out. I don't think there's like a bad song by any means, but like, there's ones that could have been recorded better. There's ones that I could have thought it out a little bit more and stuff, but like, it's all growth, you know?
That's just it. That's the beauty of it. You get to grow. You're growing in public, which is scary.
Yeah.
Dude, I mean, kudos.
Yeah.
But where, all right, so Blue, 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 when did you put Blue, Blue, Blue out?
Like, I don't remember a date.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, probably in February sometime.
Okay, so just a couple months ago.
Yeah. Yeah, I had put something out maybe in November or October or something, like six songs, and then it got around to February, and I thought, man, it's been a while since I put something out, and so I just put it out.
Did it.
I write way more songs than I could ever possibly record.
Yeah.
So, like, even to put out, like, 18 songs was, like, scratching the surface of, like, I've too many.
Dude, you're a real artist. Like, you're the real deal.
I don't know, but I think I just, my mind just goes and goes and goes. And, like, I have enough wherewithal to write the ones down that might make a little bit of sense to someone else.
Fair. Well, dude, but I mean, it's a lot to always be creative and keeping in that creative mindset. And like while you're working, you know, working a full-time job and living life, right? Oh, and then going to shows and doing all those things. So just the sheer volume is impressive alone. I mean, we all know that like not every song you write is your best song, right? And so the fact that I think you told me off air before, you write like 15 songs a week or something like that.
I like to exaggerate sometimes. That's not like an exaggeration some weeks.
Yeah.
Like sometimes I write like five songs in a day. And like I think last week I probably wrote maybe five good songs. And then like every day there's like, you know, a four bar of something that I like, oh man, this would be really good. Or I have this one hook right now that I really want to work with, but it's been like maybe 2 months since I thought of the first idea, and then finally I paired it with some other lyrics like a week ago, and then now I'm kind of like, I can't figure out a verse for it. Mm. But like I have in my phone probably, 150 finished songs. Dude. That haven't been recorded.
Dude.
And then I have stems of songs. I couldn't even tell you how many.
Just,
you know.
Yeah, probably it's like the Prince Vault. You know?
I feel like right now I am just music and, you know, like my drawings. I'm just like stacking things up.
Yeah.
And hopefully I'll be able to like sell that off at some point and make a living out of it or something.
That's the goal.
Yeah. If there's any like comic book publishers that want to publish a single pane comic book. Oh yeah, hit me up because I really desperately want to do that, but I don't know how to do it.
Yeah, no, that'd be sick because your drawings are incredible too. Yeah, and I'm sure people tell you this all the time. How long have you been drawing for?
Forever. This is one of my favorite things to tell people. I got in trouble in arts class when I was like third grade because I was doodling on a worksheet. It's been forever.
Yeah.
And I realized in my last year of college that like I like drawing more than I kind of like doing anything else.
Yeah.
So like, why not try and do something with it? If I have to go get a full-time job and I have to work every day, no one's going to get mad at me if, you know, I'm just doodling a little bit, you know, during the shift. Hopefully my new boss isn't listening to this.
We can cut that part out.
No, it's fine. He's a cool guy. Yeah. I trust him.
Shout out to all the bosses everywhere. Always listening.
Shout out to the bosses. Don't listen to my music, please.
Yeah. It's very pro-capitalist. It's like Toby Keith around 2003. I kid.
Whiskey for my man.
Beer for my horses. Man. Yeah. So, that's incredible and super cool because you're on the right track. I think I've probably brought this up before on podcasts, but there's something about like finding the thing that you want to do. And if you try and shoehorn something into your life that you don't really want, right? Like an example that Jason Isbell gave. I don't know why he's always my example. I'm not even ripping on him.
This guy hates Jason Isbell.
Dude, I fucking love Jason Isbell. That's what's funny about it. This is a good one, but he's talking about, he gave an interview one time and he was talking about, he's like, hey, if you want your kid to play baseball and you look out in the yard and he's not standing there with a glove just playing baseball, that kid's not going to grow up to play baseball. Like, it's not the thing that he does to fill his time when there's nothing else going on. You know what I mean? And so you've got drawing and then music and then, like, you just fill your time with the things you want to do and are creating a living and a body of work, which is super cool. Do your drawings, like, influence your songs or your songs influence your drawings at all? Yeah?
Yeah. It's less common that I write a lyric or I draw, you know, like, something from one of my own songs. I draw a lot of lyrics from other people, but a lot of the times, if I think of something and I draw it down, it stays with me for a long time.
Yeah.
And I have that hook I alluded to earlier is one day someone will find my skull and keep it. And so it goes like, now the song is like, one day someone will find my skull and keep it. One day someone will understand my genius. Until then, it'll be our little secret. And
that's a good line.
Yeah. But I don't know what else to do with it. It's too heavy to, you know, write something that doesn't fit with it.
I feel your pain. Yeah. I feel your pain. I get it. And I'm not going to call you a limited musician because I think you're a talented musician, but it is one of those things of like, wouldn't it be nice if you had every musical idea ever at your disposal where you're like, I just need this dark thing that I can pull out of the ether that'll match this super heavy lyric that I just wrote.
Yo, I'm really getting into, I was really scared of loops and beats and stuff like that because I have like, you know, anyone who knows me knows that I really don't stay on time or in beat or anything. I'm kind of just yelling and playing a music instrument at the same time. But
it's working out for Medium Build.
Yeah.
I don't know if you know who that guy is.
No, I don't know who that is.
I'm not even ripping on him, but every time I see him, he's just yelling with a guitar.
Yeah.
But you know, hey, it's working. He's doing it.
My reference for that is it worked out for Meek Mill.
Oh, yeah. It's perfect. Yeah.
I have kind of started working with keyboards because I kept cutting my fingers up playing guitar.
I saw that.
I play really, really hard, and like even cutting my fingers that I play with the chords with and stuff like that.
Dude.
And so I just decided, I'll play keyboard for like 2 weeks and just let my fingers heal a little bit. And my buddy Kyle Yakubik, who was in a band called Paint Party, and he's got his own personal project right now. He gave me for free a Wurlitzer organ with a drum machine on it.
Fun.
And it's just crazy. So that's, I wrote a song using that.
Yeah.
And it's like, I'm going to play it today, but with the guitar. And it's like the first song I know that I've written in 4/4 time. I can't say I'm going to play it in 4/4 time today because I'm playing on a guitar.
Fair.
But like it I wrote it in 4/4 time, and it was like this just unlocked a new world for me a little bit.
Yeah.
And then that's, I'm thinking, you know, maybe for a little bit I can play around with it. I have a cool Casio tone bank.
Yeah.
One too that I can play with. That
got a lot of toys.
I get real lucky that like people see my genuine interest.
Yeah.
And they just give me things.
I love that.
Yeah. And yeah. I also like to buy things a lot. I'm really, like, I got a full-time job, and I'm really bad about saving my money. And, like, I'm right on the verge right now of buying an Omnicord.
Ooh.
I might have it by the time this releases. I might have pulled out of the deal or whatever. But, I've wanted an Omnicord for years.
Yeah.
And they're so expensive, but they're so cool.
Dude, get it.
Yeah. Get I think it. I'm gonna buy it.
You should go buy it. Why not? It's just money. You can always get more.
Yeah.
Yeah. Plus you'll have your drawings and your songs. Like, you'll have your catalog.
That's, I keep saying to people, no matter how much I like fuck up my money, if I cut out of work early a bunch and I forget to use my PTO or whatever and my paycheck is tiny.
Yeah.
I somehow always make up for it by, like, suddenly booking a bunch of shows or, like, someone wants to buy a bunch of art or something like
Perfect.
That. I'm not saying I'm making a lot of money, but, yeah. like, it's the same amount of money every month
you get,
despite what I do.
You make it work, dude. Yeah. You're an artist. You make it happen. I had a friend who said something similar to me one time, but in a much different context. He was... This is when we were like 20 and or 21, something like that. And we were talking about like drinking versus smoking weed at the time. And he had recently like taken up smoking weed more than drinking, still drinking, but he was smoking more pot. And he said to me, this quote sticks with me because it was the most asinine thing I've ever heard. He's like, dude, since I'm smoking more weed now, like I just find more money for things. And I was like, what do you mean? He's like, well, whenever I need money for something, I'm able to just kind of find it. And I'm like, what type of things are you trying to buy? He's like, weed. You know, like weed. I was like, dude, you're not finding more money. You're just spending your money on weed.
On weed instead of beer.
Instead of beer. Yeah.
You weren't like half black out when you bought the beer. So.
Exactly. So, I mean, yeah, I guess you're finding money around, but it's... Yeah, that's one way to look at it. That was some, to use an internet phrase, some girl math that I...
Yeah.
Girl math, boy math, whatever that is. Okay, so, yes, you're always finding enough money to make this thing work, to make this dream do your thing. You're playing shows all the time. You're always hosting open mic nights at, I see, over at Wusos a lot,
yes,
right?
Yes.
It's kind of your deal. You're writing songs, sometimes upwards of 15 songs a week, drawing all the time. I mean, I always see you posting on Instagram with all these
it's
badass
like five
drawings.
A day, something like that.
Dude, it's incredible. The amount of output that you're making for all of this stuff is so cool. Have you ever thought of, I'm sure you have, but do you have plans to like, intermix your drawings and your music, like make like a concept record with like
you,
a comic book?
You might have just accidentally exposed my newest plan. Yeah, I want to do a zine
Ooh, cool.
with unused lyrics and doodles.
Love it.
And I ran into a slight issue of I use Procreate on my iPad to do most digital stuff.
Yep.
And when you downsize an image in Procreate, for some reason, it makes it all pixelated. I haven't figured out how to fix that yet. When I figure that out, when I decide to pick my iPad up and like look up a YouTube video, I'll probably get around to that. That's an idea. I wanted to like, I think a lot of those lyrics, I hope one day I'll come back, circle back to them and try and build songs out of them, but I don't. I just write more.
Yeah.
So that's kind of a way of like going back through them and trying to like put them out there, and maybe that will make me latch onto one of them and I'll write a song off of it or something. I don't know.
Yeah. And then you get to find a home for them and it doesn't feel like you have all this homeless stuff sitting there. I know that feeling of like notebooks full of just a bunch of stuff, and it's overwhelming at a certain point to go try and go through it and try and figure out where it can go and all of that.
I've saved everything.
Dude.
Everything.
Dude.
Like, I have every notebook I ever had, like high school, college, all that stuff. with all the doodles in them. I have a specific drawer in my room for old set lists, drawings I don't really want to sell to other people.
Wow.
Like, I don't know, just anything artistic that I'm kind of like, oh, I just want to keep this for myself.
Yeah.
It pretty much all goes in one drawer and it never gets opened.
That's awesome. Yeah. It's so cool though.
Yeah.
It's just there.
Yeah.
It just exists now.
I think there's one rare person, shout out to my friend Cherry, that has leafed through that drawer.
That's cool. Cherry must be pretty special, because that's probably a pretty personal drawer. I mean, it's all the stuff you, yeah, it's just for you. That's super cool. Dude, you're just pure.
Oh, don't say that.
No, man, but I mean, like, you just create for the purity of creating.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, it's, I don't know. I think I've done, like, a lot of shit in life, and I found that making things and having other people connect with it is pretty much the only thing that really gives me joy.
Yeah.
Whether it's, like, music or drawing or food. I love making food and sharing it with people.
Oh, yeah?
I won an award for making a great hot dish from the Hot Dish Militia.
What?
Yeah.
Tater tot
hot dish.
That's awesome.
I'm the undisputed champion of Midwest Classics hot dishes.
When did you win this award?
This last year at the... There's a Hot Dish Militia. It's a local fundraising group, and they hold a hot dish bake-off.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
All right, how often do you make hot dish? Tell me this was like the first time.
Oh, man. No, yeah, that was... So, like, my mom made it growing up, and I loved it.
Yep.
And then there's this artist, Dave Dondero, who was born in Duluth, but then he moved down south. I think he spent most of his life in Louisiana. I might be wrong about that. But he's a really cool guy. I've talked to him online a few times. I'm trying to get him to come up here for another show. He's played up here in his adult life.
Yeah.
He's got this song called Oh Minnesota, where he describes his hot dish. And so I basically merged my mom's hot dish and his hot dish recipes together.
Brilliant.
And it turned out so good. And I think I made this like last year in the maybe late springtime. It had to be around this time of year, I feel like.
Yeah.
And I think I've made it about every 2 weeks since then. I'm not... It's like, people in my life are like, you're eating tater tot hot dish again? Like, are you sure about that? And I'm burying the lead. I eat it with ketchup.
All right.
and it's been described as a ketchup blanket.
I can appreciate that.
Yeah,
that's. I mean, there is a lot of overlap with like music and art and food. There is artistry to making food, and like good chefs. There's an art to that.
People who watch me cook tell me that like you do this in like a artistic way.
Yeah,
I'm like, yeah, because you're supposed to for it to taste good.
Yeah, it's how it, dude. It's so true. My mom was such a good cook back in the day too, and I know everyone says that about their mom, but she was always like, it's about how it looks on the plate, you know, like, and how everything looks coming together and all the flavor. It's super cool. And now I work with chefs for my day job, and they just nerd out about everything. It's the coolest thing in the world.
Have you ever had ham gravy?
No,
my mom makes ham gravy.
Yeah,
it's so good.
Oh, from like the drippings of the ham.
Yeah,
I have had
it's so salty.
It's so
and
good.
So good. Sorry to all the vegans and vegetarians out there. Sorry about that.
Shout out vegans and vegetarians. They can have plant-based ham gravy.
Sure.
Yeah, wouldn't be the same.
I have no idea how you would make that.
I don't know either. I don't. You know.
Good. Coconut oil gravy.
Oof. Ooh, brutal. Well, we've we've fell down a rabbit hole of food, but I did make you bring a guitar with you.
Yeah.
Do you want to play a song for the people?
I think we're good, man.
Okay.
Take it away whenever you're ready. All right, cool. This is a song called The Sisyphus of Babbitt, and I do not know how to spell Sisyphus. On the dash, and I just toodaloo. Please get me a fucking Hams. Please get me a fucking Hams. Please get me a fucking Hams. Please get me a fucking Hams.
Hell yeah, dude. That's a badass song.
That's my new favorite song.
Yeah, that's a good song.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh,
that's,
man.
It's all just a made-up story, really. But it's a lot influenced by things that have happened to me. I think I pulled Babbitt from my friend Worm that grew up in Babbitt. Subconsciously.
Yeah.
I was just like, I'd said that first line to myself, the van broke down in Babbitt, because I used to drive a conversion van, and it broke down on me all the time. And I said that, and I was like, that's got to be a song.
That
is
a song.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's kind of just a rambly.
I dig it.
Yeah.
Just get me a fucking Hams.
Yeah. The first time I played that, 3 people bought me Hams.
Dude, that's your calling card, dirt bike.
And then that one, I'll record it eventually. This is the first recording of it ever.
Oh, so. Yeah?
Exclusive. But eventually I'll record it. I play it with that organ drum machine at home.
Oh, nice.
And I'm hitting the keys on that with the guitar headstock. And I thought I invented that. Totally thought I invented that. I went out to a bar, and there's a dude named Zebra Zeke in the Runaway Screamers. He was doing that way better than me. There's probably a million people who do that.
It is a unique idea, though. You get some credit, because I wouldn't have thought that anyone was out there doing that.
Dude, when the idea hit me, I literally, grabbed my guitar and ran.
Yeah. You got to sometimes. Yeah. Oh, all right, man. We got to take 1 second and thank some sponsors. It won't matter for you at all, because we're going to come right back, but we're going to take a break and thank some sponsors. And we will be right back. I'm glad you're here with Dirt Bike Boyfriend.
So let's talk about our sponsors, right? Car Concierge really is making this podcast happen. And let me tell you about what they do. It is such an awesome service. I really only want to take sponsors on this podcast that I truly believe in. And this is one of them. Because if you've ever bought a car, you know how much of a pain in the ass it is. And so Car Concierge, right, therefore, if you need to find a new car, but you don't have the time, and maybe some of those past experiences with shady dealerships and salespeople has just made you avoid starting the search for that new vehicle altogether, all right? Car Concierge gets it, and that's why they exist. Car Concierge is going to work directly with you to understand what you're looking for in your ideal vehicle, and then they'll take the search on for you, right? So it's going to save you endless amounts of time and questions by working with Car Concierge, because they're going to search, find, negotiate, and ultimately deliver your dream car directly to you without you having to step foot in a car dealership. So visit their website at gocarconcierge.com or call 612-662-7788 to get started today. And you can find that link right in the show notes as well. So you don't have to go search for it. Go click more info or whatever app you're listening on right down there, Go Car Concierge. You can find out everything you need to know if you're in the market for a new car. They can help you out. It will make your life so much easier. All right, now back to my conversation with Dirt Bike Boyfriend.
I'm glad you're here.
Yes.
Welcome back.
Well, thank you. Thank you for having me.
You're welcome. Okay, so where we left things was the van broke down in Babbitt.
Yes.
You were telling the story of how you used to have a conversion van that broke down all the time.
Yes.
You had a friend from Babbitt, and that's where that song kind of happened. Where did the Get Me a Fucking Hams line come from?
So that actually came from another song. I was writing a different song, and I had that as the hook. It was more like it was the last line of a verse, and then I was like, man, it would be so cool if I just repeated that a couple times. And then I wrote that song at probably 2 a.m. I just woke up, and I was like, oh, I got this song in my head, and started typing it out, and then I had 4 verses, and I was just like, okay, well,
dude,
look at that tomorrow.
Yeah.
And then I read it in the morning, and I'm like, oh, this is awesome. And then I went and I played it, and I'm like, this song sucks. This song is super whiny and preachy, and it just sucks. But the Please Get Me a Fucking Hams is hard as hell. And I actually posted like the little lyric on Instagram, and Ross Thorne, shout out to our tall friend, Ross Thorne.
He's out there making tall people music for sure.
Yes, tall people music, old dad music. he sent me a message and said, like, Bob Dylan ain't got shit on this.
Oh, dude. So, hey. Dude, straight up, though, you are... That's why the first thing I said to you, you're a fucking poet, man. Your lyrics are incredible. Every time I see you post them on the side, and then like you really get the full taste of, because the Bob Dylan thing, or, I don't think it was Bob Dylan, it was Guy Clark maybe. I'm probably butchering who it was, but they were like, anything that I write has to look good written down. Like any song that I sing, I need it to look good when it's written down too.
That's, I don't know what that is for me.
Yeah.
I think it's because I don't really understand like timing patterns and stuff like that. That when I write it, it has to work in a certain shape and form, and like lines have to be the same length.
Yep.
It like physical length in typed out kind of thing. Like, and it works. It really works.
It does. It is a trick. Not a trick, but it's a tool. It's a tool to use to make sure it looks good written down before you try and sing.
You know, if your verse is shaped like a, I feel like a vase is the worst, but it's like, you know, skinnier at the top, wider in the middle, skinnier at the bottom.
Yeah.
You know, like that is like the perfect verse to me most of the time.
Yeah.
And then a lot of them will start, you know, really long line at the top, and then the rest is kind of shorter, and then the last line is really long again. And it's like these internal rules I set for myself when I'm writing.
Yeah.
And most of them are not conscious. There's sometimes I catch myself like saying this little quip to myself while I'm like writing it or whatever.
Yeah.
But like, yeah, the shape of the song really matters to me.
Dude, that's super insightful and really cool, actually.
Yeah. No hate, Rupi Kaur. There was another artist that I cannot remember, but there was a series of books that were called like TTYL and whatever. They were for like young girls. And when I was in middle school, I read all of them.
Yeah.
And all of them were like, you know, there was a chapter or whatever, a page that was in the shape of a smiley face or, you know, things like that. And I feel like that influenced me a lot.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah, dude, you pull from everything.
Oh, yeah.
Nothing is off limits.
I consume an obscene amount of stuff.
Yeah.
Like, you know, every rapper who was active from 2002 to, like, probably, like, 2017 or so was when I started getting more interested in other genres.
Yeah.
But, like, every song, every rapper, I've probably listened to it. If not, like, I have, like, an encyclopedia knowledge of it. And then, you know, that expands to, like, TV and, like, other things. I don't know. I have like a very strong memory for certain things, and I have a terrible memory for other things. And I'm just, like, a sponge for media.
Dude, that's
stupid huge. Trivia quips about who was in what movie and... whatever.
I don't think it's stupid trivia though when you're creating art, you know? When you're creating, cuz there's an element of, go ahead.
Rap songs, like, you know, there's so many references in rap songs that if you're not looking for them, you're never going to figure out, you know.
Exactly.
Movie references, or they'll like use an actor's name in place of the character's name and then like cross-reference it to another movie they were in, and like that shit is what made me want to write.
Yeah.
Like, you know, I write my feelings, but like I want to write the kinds of things that like amazed me when I was like a little kid and I was listening to shitty rap songs on my shitty headphones on the way to hockey practice.
Dude, I love it. I mean, yeah, you're right though, because when you can consume all that stuff and you can point out those Easter eggs, then you can kind of build off of that and you can go and do it your own way.
I feel like it's so hard to write correctly, but like the way that I want to write.
Yeah.
I don't think I've ever written a song that way. Right? So like I know what you mean. Everything that everyone likes is like by accident almost. Yeah. I write all these songs and I'll go play them at an open mic, or every single one of my sets is like mostly new or completely different order or whatever.
Yep.
To just like see how people respond to it. And I don't want to say like that's the only way I judge my music is how people respond to
it. Comedians do it.
But if people, test it at open mic.
Yeah.
And if like I have this song $20 that when I played it the first time at open mic, I got like a standing ovation and like people, I wrote it about this event that I did not go to.
Yeah.
And people were like, were you there? That's, it perfectly encapsulates what that place felt like and stuff like that. And I was like, now I just like had a feeling and I wrote it down and, you know, it's one of like four songs I wrote this week. And but then, you know, enough people said, that's a good song that now I know I have to play it every time.
Yeah, you don't have a choice now. Now it's theirs. It's not yours anymore.
I don't think that's something like almost when you're not performing, you think people are like, that's such a whiny complaint or whatever.
Yeah.
But I don't not want to play Cops Freak Me Out every time I play. But like, I don't want to play it every open mic. I don't want to play it every time I pick up a guitar.
Exactly.
Because if I'm playing it every show, which I do, I don't think I've ever played a show ever without playing Cops Freak Me Out.
Yeah, it is a kick-ass song.
Then anytime I'm practicing for the show, I have to do my full set. It's like a, I don't know, I don't want to. Whatever, self-diagnose myself, but it's like an obsessive thing of like, if I have a show in 2 weeks and I have my set list planned, every time I pick my guitar up, I'm playing my full set list.
Yeah.
And and then
that's some dedication.
Yeah. And then like, so I play Cops Freak Me Out 100 times more than anyone else has ever heard it. So like, fuck, dude, I never, it's hard to get bored of that song, but like, it's, you know, I don't want to be bored of it while I'm playing it for other people.
Exactly.
So yeah, it's a fine line of.
It definitely is.
And then sometimes you forget your own lyrics.
And it's weird because like on those songs like that you play a million times, those are the ones that you go into autopilot on, and then all of a sudden you're like, what happened? I've kind of blacked out for the last minute.
You click in and then one thing can happen, and you even like. One time I started playing a song and I needed a bandmate to come up on stage for the next song. And I just kind of like motioned, like, just come up on stage. It's fine. And just doing that threw me up enough and I was just dead blank. Yeah. Like, I couldn't even like, couldn't go to a hook, couldn't go to anything, couldn't think of the chord structure. Yep.
I got nothing.
Yeah. It's funny. It's all mental. And
it's very mental.
I've been reading a lot about what it means to constantly kind of close your eyes and try and be in another world when you're performing.
Yeah.
Which I do a lot.
Yep.
And I don't really subscribe to all of the super negative things that I saw online about it. But, like, I don't know if, you know, is it better to lean all the way into, you know, I'm in my own world and I can perform like crazy and I can make myself cry and that kind of stuff.
Yep.
Or, you know, I love to connect with the crowd. And it's a little bit tough to do when your eyes are closed for 90% of your set. But, you know, it's always this, the whole performance thing is this whole internal struggle or just reasoning with yourself about how do I present myself to other people. And
And it's a dance with the audience. Yeah. I mean, you might start a set and be like, I'm going to be eyes open. I'm going to be engaging with this audience. And the audience doesn't give it back to you. And then two songs in, your eyes closed, you know, and you're crazy. Back into your own world.
Yeah.
And so it's you give what you get out too. There's an element of that.
It's so the craziest thing to me is that it feels unpredictable.
Yep.
Like, you can set up the coolest show in the world and think everyone's going to show up and the room's going to be awesome and whatever. And like, it can go one of like five different ways. And like, most of them are not what you wanted it to be.
Yeah,
and so shit.
True, yeah.
And, but then like, you can, you know, be, or even shows that you are really hyped about too. Sometimes all of a sudden the room is full and it's the best energy and people are responding to you. Yep. Like, I don't know if other people would consider it like heckling or whatever, but I love when people respond to me during my songs.
Oh yeah.
Like,
it's the best.
If a room is like that comfortable with me that they feel like they can converse with me while I'm performing.
Yep.
That's like the coolest thing in the world to me.
Yeah. It feels so much more like it's like you're hanging out together now. We're hanging out. I started this thing. I think I started it with a show with you where I just would introduce a new song and I would be like, this is a brand new song and I need all of you to tell me if it fucking sucks, right? Yeah. And it kind of tells me everything about the crowd, how they react to that. Like, if they kind of go, oh, I don't know what to do, how am I going to tell? Oh, it's going to be bad. This is going to be bad, Jerry. This isn't going to be very good. And they're just like, all right, this is what I'm going to get from you guys for the rest of the night, you know? But if they kind of get like a little bit of a chuckle, I mean, yeah, it's a cheap joke, but if you get a little chuckle, you're like, all right, we're on the right track.
Yeah,
guys. We're in this together.
Yeah, it's yeah, you can when you make your little joke and it falls flat.
Oh yeah.
That's the craziest feeling in the world. Dude, like it hurts and it's like scary and it's like my vision starts going black and I don't know what to do.
Especially cuz we get the cheapest laughs.
Yeah.
Like musicians get like preacher at a wedding laughs.
What I've found is that no one wants to hear your planned joke.
No, they don't want to plan one.
Say something silly or funny and people will die laughing at it.
Yes.
But if you plan a joke,
it's not worth
it. Everyone hates you.
They know it right away. Yeah. They know they it can right feel away. It.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so they can sense it. It's like planned out. Or you have the same story you tell for every single song.
I can't. Oh, I can't.
Dude, I mean.
I'm sure there are enough people that have been to enough of my shows to say that, oh, no, you say the same thing before every song. Or there's one transition I love to do between two songs.
Yep.
I play a love song, and then in between them, I say, that last one was a love song, and this next one's a hate song. And I start playing really hard.
Yeah.
And, like, someone told me that was awesome, so then I do that every time now.
I get it.
But, like, when you, like, I don't know, old performers who – it's like the song they've been playing for like 30 years and it's the same story every single time.
Yep.
How can you like stand to do that? I don't know.
You know who does it the best? Todd Snyder. Have you ever listened to Todd Snyder? No. All right. The homework for when you're consuming all of your media, you should listen to the Todd Snyder live album. I think it's called East Nashville, Live from East Nashville or something. He goes on and he starts rambling. He's like, I'm Todd Snyder. If you don't know me, you know, I talk between the songs. Sometimes I go on for as many as like 18 minutes in between the songs. Sometimes I'll come to town and tell one story about how the song got made. And then I'll come to town a month later and tell you an entirely different story about that same song. And he's just like completely ripping on himself about what he's doing. And he does it so well and it's so seamless. And I thought that all of it was organic. But it's planned.
Oh, no. That would hurt me.
It didn't hurt me. It was just like, oh, you can do it well. If you do it right. Like, because I found out it was planned when I watched a documentary of him. And he's like walking around and he's like, I come down 18 minutes before a show. And he's like definitely rehearsing what he's going to say in his head as he's walking around like the desert. And I was like, holy shit. Wow. I guess there are people that can do it. I can't. When I rehearse it falls flat. It falls so flat.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know if I've ever – I feel like, you know, open mic is my testing grounds. So I think I learned at open mic that I can't make jokes, and I don't think I've ever done it during a real show. I hope I haven't. But, yeah, if anyone out there really wants to play music or you're already playing and you're just, like, scared to perform, find an open mic in your town that you're comfortable at. It doesn't have to be the most popular one, and it doesn't have to, like – whatever, just so long as you feel like you can go there like weekly or on a semi-regular basis and just play in front of people, it's like there's no better learning ground. You'll meet a lot of people. Some of them are awesome and some of them are not, and you have to deal with that. But that's just fucking life.
Some of them will make you come on their podcast.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. No, it's true, though. The open mics are huge, and it's unfortunate that, I don't know, open mics don't have the reputation that they do in like the comedy scene as much, if that makes sense, where like the comedy scene, it seems like, and I'm not in it, so this is from the outside looking in, it seems like they're like, oh, go to the open mics, prove your chops, and then we'll pull you from that and give you gigs elsewhere. And it's the music scene seems very much like, go to the open mics, prove your chops, and then still go find your own gigs from that, right?
No, I honestly, like, I grew up with an old dad, and my dad loved to watch comedy specials, so like, I honestly really thought it was going to be like that from hearing how comedians talk about doing the business and shit. And like it's – I feel like I've been doing as much as I can for like 4 years now.
I'd say that's fair.
And like I still can't get booked in rooms in town. Like people ignore my emails and stuff like that. And that – like it drives me crazy. And I try to reason with myself that, like, you know, not everyone knows my name. Yeah. Sure, I've been working really hard at it, but it's impossible for some of these people to have found out about me by this point, you know?
Do you want to know a trick?
What's that?
This is a trick I've used. I've used it before. Anyone out there can also use it, too. I am notoriously... have animosity towards bookers for just not your only job is to reply to emails. Like at least reply to people's emails, dude. I mean, that's literally in the title of your job. But that aside, so when I don't get a response from them, I email them again. Obviously you do your follow-up or whatever, and I say, hey, Dirt Bike, booking for X venue, reached out a little while ago about a gig, didn't hear back from you, wondering if you're the right person to connect with on this, and if not, can you point me in the direction of who I should be talking to? And then all of a sudden they reply and they're like, no, I'm the guy, I'm in charge of this, I'm in charge. Yeah, okay, buddy.
Question their authority.
Exactly. Yes. It works like a charm. Yeah. So go ahead and piss off some bookers, everybody out there listening. Right. Even if you're not trying to book gigs, just send them that email. Please, bombard their inbox because they're not replying. Bookers, you know I love you.
Yeah. I'm going to keep my... bite my tongue for right now.
you're fine. You're safe. It's all just me.
That Grant Glad guy complained about all of us. Don't book my show.
I like, it's tough, and it's hard to motivate yourself to book shows, and even one denial, it's so crazy that an outright denial sometimes is worse than no response, and sometimes no response eats at you forever and stuff. Like, it all sucks, but you have to deal with it. But, like, doing it like solo, I feel like, has been one of the hardest parts of.
It's a lot.
If you have four people in your band, there's four people who can reach out and not feel dejected and shut down. And like,
here's the catch, though. There's not.
Yeah, that's true. I know. I know that. I have friends who are in bands, and one person does everything. Yeah.
That's how it goes. And then everyone else shows up and bitches.
Yeah, it's ideal that four people care about your band. But if four people care about your band, then all of your songs are going to be insane and terrible.
That's so true. Yeah, you need somebody to just kind of sit there and be a sounding board and just play root notes on the bass or whatever.
Yeah.
Nothing. I'm not knocking bass players. I'm just saying.
Shout out to my roommate, bass player.
I think bass players are the fucking best. I was just using that as an example of you need somebody who's not as invested and doesn't want to fight about every single musical choice that's going on in the band.
Yeah, I was notorious as a child for does not play well with others.
Yeah,
I feel like I'm very difficult to work with as a musician because I don't know. I'm entirely self-taught. I did when it was free during the pandemic, I did the Fender online lessons learn what chords to play. And I gave up after I learned like four chords. And then I just started looking at chord charts.
Yeah.
And like everything else is self-taught. Piano is entirely self-taught. And I'm not good at piano. I have a weird natural aptitude for it. I think that's the right word.
Yeah.
But like... I don't know what I'm doing when I'm playing a piano, so I can only play like jazzy, weird piano. Yeah,
that's awesome. That'll work.
Yeah.
Because I'm in the jazz band.
Yeah. I forgot where I was going with that.
Oh, I cut you off. I'm sorry. I just ruined your whole train of thought.
No idea.
Yeah. No, so we fell down a rabbit hole of shows and your songs and how you were self-taught musician. That's where we ended up. Mm-hmm. So you were self-taught and everything, and that makes it hard to kind of do the thing with others because you're probably speaking a different language to a certain extent.
Oh, yes. Right? Yeah. That's where we were. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, I've been working with a sort of ragtag band recently. And it's very much so like I write the songs, I play them for them, and then they figure out how to work with it.
I love it.
And like, you know, people have told me it's the best my music has ever sounded and stuff. And I love that.
Yeah.
Part of me wants someone to come in and like make me learn how to play my songs correctly, or not my current songs, but you know, we can write some new ones that are in an actual time pattern and make sense and stuff like that. A part of me wants that, and then there's this other part of me that's like, fuck all of you, I'm gonna do what I want, I'm gonna play, you know, I don't even know time signatures, but like I'm gonna put 5 bars and then I'm gonna put 4 bars and then I'm gonna put 5 bars and I'm gonna put 4 bars and I don't know what that means, but fuck you.
That's awesome. Dude, yeah, I love it. Just you'll piss off every drummer ever, but that's fine.
Yo, my drummer hates me. Yo, there's I asked him for it and he still hasn't sent it to me, but I desperately want this page that he was making that was trying to figure out the time signatures of the songs that we were playing. And there was like question marks and like there was songs that had like 4 of them written down, like, you know, in like a pattern and stuff like that. And I was just like, yeah. I don't think I should be ashamed of that, because I'm eventually, and I've been saying it the whole time, eventually I will have an innate sense of time like that.
Yeah.
Like it'll take 10 years. I wasn't playing a musician. I wasn't playing an instrument when I was, you know, 12 years old, like a lot of people. I raced dirt bikes.
Yeah.
Full time from, you know, 7 years old until I was 19 or so.
Dude.
And
what?
Yeah.
I know there's so much here. Wins a hot dish competition, raised dirt bikes for 12 years.
Champion.
Multi-time champion? Yes. All right, tell me more about dirt bike racing.
Yeah, so I said right when we introduced the legendary Paul Holland, that's my dad.
Yeah.
He had like a pro-am license when he was racing way back in the day. Cool. So I grew up into it. And I raced... I had some health complications early in life.
Yeah.
So I kind of got into it late in terms of someone who's going to race dirt bikes professionally. You talked about Jason Isbell's deal about baseball players. You got to be playing baseball all the time.
Yeah.
That's really how it is for dirt bikes.
Oh,
if you want to be a pro dirt bike rider, like, you literally can't have a life outside of dirt bikes. It's insane.
Yeah.
From the moment you're a tiny child onwards, like, and
there's so many things like that. It's crazy.
It is. Yeah. The whole world is just manufacturing people for things and stuff like that.
That's why Russia had so many chess grandmasters. Did you know that? They would just like send people to chess school.
Really?
They'd be like, you're good at chess at 3.
We can conquer the world stage through chess.
Yeah, dude, it was honestly part of the strategy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
God damn.
Dirt bikes racing.
Dirt bikes, yes. So I raced seriously from 7. By the time I was like 11, 12 was when I started winning things. And there's a series that still runs in Minnesota called Motokaze. They're fucking awesome people. Incredible people. Everyone involved. I won a handful, maybe like 3 or 4 championships when I was a little kid there. And then I raced the state series. I didn't do as good in the state series. It's a bit of a different kind of racing, and I was better at more tight technical stuff. And then growing up, like, you know, from the point I won my first championship onward, I was like, I'm going to be a pro dirt bike rider. Like, you know, fuck everyone who thinks otherwise, whatever. And there's probably some dirt bike rider out there that that's like, fuck you, dude, you were never going to make it. And that's probably true. It never happened. But, like, I really thought, you know, from, you know, 10, 11 onwards, that I was going to be a pro dirt bike rider. And, you know, there was a point in time where I did, like, 150 races in a single year.
Dude.
Something like that. I was, I would, like, skip school on a Wednesday to drive to Iowa to do a race.
That's awesome.
And, yeah, like, you know, my dad provided that life for me, and that's incredible of him. I can't believe he, you know,
super cool,
let me do that. And it was what I wanted to do. There was no, it wasn't pushing me into it. Like, that was the only thing I wanted when I was, you know, my entire life. And when I was like 18, I might have been 17 the time it happened. I was in the biggest race of my life. It's like movie level story. Someone once told me I should write a book about my life. And like 40, I'll write a book about my life.
Call
fuck
it Tater
that shit.
Tater Tot Hot Dish.
Tater Tot Hot Dish. My mom calls it casserole.
Oh.
Yeah. That's
She from elsewhere?
No.
Oh.
Yeah. But it was casserole to me for the longest time. And then people scolded me about a year ago for calling it casserole. So now it's hot dish. but yeah, I just, in the biggest race of my life, I was leading it. There's a, amateur national championship called Loretta Lynn's. You know who Loretta Lynn is?
That name rings a bell.
She is a coal miner's daughter. You know, built a ranch for herself, and then one of her sons got into motocross, and they built a really sweet track there on this huge acreage.
Yeah.
And I don't really know the full history of it. At one point I did, but it eventually became the epicenter of amateur motocross in Tennessee, somewhere in Tennessee.
Shout out Loretta Lynn. She's like the Dolly Parton of dirt bikes.
Yes. Yeah, crazy.
That's cool.
And so, I mean, when you're a kid and you want to race dirt bikes, your goal every year is to get to Loretta Lynn's. And there's an early season qualifier in your state. There's a mid-season qualifier for your region. And then you get to Loretta's if you place in the top 7 of 40 in both of those. And I was leading the regional qualifier, I think. I might be wrong. It could have been the area qualifier. Tigerton, Wisconsin. Horrible history for that town for anyone who wants to look into it. I have a song that mentions something about that.
About Tigerton.
I was leading the race. I made a dumb mistake. I killed the engine coming into a corner, and the kid in second, his name's Brady Bill. Shout out to Brady Bill if you're out there. You're a cool guy. Thank you for coming up to me after the race. He ran into me, and my knee basically twisted the wrong way around his front tire.
Oh.
And there's a whole lot of damage.
Yeah.
You know, I didn't walk for, I think, 7 months, something like that.
Dude.
And that wasn't, like, the end of the dream or whatever, but, like, really that was the end of it. That was pretty much when it cut off, and I was like, I got to go to college and, you know, do all this stuff.
Do the other thing.
And then I still held on to it until I was, you know, a couple years into college. And I just had, after that, just a, actually, today is the 1 year, or not 1 year, it's like the 13 year anniversary of my first ever injury.
Yeah.
Not that one, but I sprained my thumb while I was playing tennis. I was a tennis player when I was really young. And like that, I had no injuries from racing until I was, that would make me 14.
Yeah.
So I sprained my thumb playing tennis. And then I, as a result of that, I ended up tearing ligaments in my hand while I was racing, from like the stress of it and stuff like that. And then I ended up breaking my collarbone and separating my shoulder.
Dude.
And, then I did the knee deal. And then I've had a long string of concussions as well. To be fair with everyone, it's a very odd thing to talk about. Knowing like everyone knows what concussions do to people.
Yeah,
I've had like 8 concussions. I feel a little bit dumber.
Yeah.
Than I was when I was younger, but sure. You know, I've never been prone to violence, so I'm thankful for that. I'll get dumber, but I won't hurt anyone, so, whatever. Yeah. I don't want to ever get another concussion. That's actually, I retired about 2 years ago, because I got a concussion that it just made me go, wow, I couldn't play guitar for a little while.
Oh, geez, yeah. No, concussions are rough.
Yeah.
That's not fun. Dude, you're not going to believe this. It's been an hour of us talking.
Oh, my God.
Right?
Yeah.
Doesn't it kind of fly by?
We barely got into it. No one knows that I'm deaf in my right ear.
Lay it all in line right now. what else do you...
I don't know. That was about the only reveal I had left.
Deaf in his right ear. We got a regular Mozart dirt bike boyfriend over here. Mozart's not the deaf one. Beethoven was the one who went deaf. Yeah.
I don't have no idea.
I was just at a party the other day, and not to call anybody out, but it was kind of funny because we were all like talking about cultural references and we were off by like one. We were like,
everyone was like, I'm pretty sure it's this. No.
We were like, Mozart was the deaf one. And we're like, nah, no, it was Beethoven. Like someone was correcting us. And then that turned into an ear thing. And then we tried to make like a Mike Tyson thing. We're like, Mike Tyson got his ear bit off. We're like, no, Mike Tyson bit off a guy's ear. It was just like slightly askew from The Matrix. But all that to say, do you want to play one more song for the people?
Oh, yes.
Yeah? Absolutely. Before we kind of see them out? And while you're getting set up there, where can the people find you and all your music and all your artwork and all of the things?
Yeah, I am I'm almost everywhere. I try to be as everywhere as I can. So you can find me on streaming services, Dirt Bike Boyfriend. Dirt Bike, one word. Boyfriend, one word. That's how I see it in my head. That's not necessarily how the dictionary sees it. But you can also, if you want to directly pay me, you can find me on Bandcamp, dbbf.bandcamp.com. And then I'm probably most active on Instagram as far as social media. You can catch me on Facebook. And this is the lamest thing that anyone will ever say on your podcast. I am on Threads. Oh, if you want to follow me on Threads, I post dumb things on Threads.
Someone's got to do it.
It's like the only things I will ever post on Threads are things that just don't fit a drawing and they don't fit a song. And it's just like, someone needs to read this and see if they laugh about it.
This needs to go somewhere.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that's fair. And do you have any shows coming up?
I will be playing.
So this will come out April 24th for reference.
April 24th.
Yep.
I will be playing at that's wrong. I will be playing as part of Homegrown. That's going to be on May 4th at RT Quinlan's at 9:15 p.m.
Nice.
I am especially excited to play alongside or before the local band Bratwurst. Oh. I'm not going to play it right now because it's way too intricate, but I have a song named after them about them. And I have yet to be able to play it for any members of Bratwurst. So my hope is that I can play it for them there.
Love it.
If there was like a project that I was working on right now, that would be the first song that I was recording it for. I'm on a little bit of a break. We know that I have some other things that I need to be working on. A
couple irons in the
fire.
Yeah.
But, eventually when I get around to recording, Bratwurst will probably be on that album along with Sisyphus of Babbitt and a million other songs.
Dude, hell yeah. What are you going to play for the people here?
Well, I figured, we got to do the one that everyone wants to hear. We'll do The Cops Freak Me Out.
It's a classic. Bring us on home, bro.
All right. Just as fuck, I think that was the same one that I saw.
last month when I was smoking a frog. You hit that kid with his gun. The cops freak me out, and yeah, I break the law, but the law's unjust, and it's not my fault. The cops freak me out. I was just smoking outside, and they ran right by, chasing a kid with a knife, and I was scared for my life. I was not from their guns. Embarrassing. They were just, I was just smoking outside, and they ran right by, chasing a kid with a knife, and I was scared for my life, not from that kid with a knife. I saw their guns and the light from the street signs. It was night, so I ducked out of their sight. I watched him run for his life. I watched him slip on the ice. Instead of kicking the knife, they started kicking his spine. I started losing my mind. I tried to run back inside, but I stepped into the light, and they all come back outside. The cops freak me out, and yeah, I break the law, but the law's unjust, and it's not my fault. The cops freak me out, they're always across the street. I think they're watching me, dude, they're just getting Chinese. They'll catch me smoking weed, they wanna bother me. Take all my ecstasy, then they will sentence me, and they will make me clean. That's if it gets that far. What if we get to the car, and it's late and it's dark, and we drive out to a park? What if they laugh and they start pointing their guns at my heart? I plead I'm young and I'm smart, but the barrel still sparks. The cops freak me out, and yeah, I break the law, but the law's unjust, and it's not my fault.
There you have it, folks, my conversation with Dirt Bike Boyfriend. What a cool dude. What cool tunes. What cool poetry. Go check him out in all the places, right? Sorry, my cat is walking on me as I'm recording this. Hello, June. I'm going to leave that in. I think that fits the theme of the episode. But we're going to thank our sponsor one more time, Car Concierge, for really making this podcast happen. And again, here's what Car Concierge does, okay? You need a new car, but you don't have the time, okay? Or maybe you've dealt with shady dealerships and salespeople in the past, and it just makes you not even want to go and look for a new vehicle, right? So that's you. Car Concierge gets all of that, and that's why they exist. They're going to work directly with you to understand what you're looking for in your ideal vehicle, and then they're going to take the search on for you. Right? So it's going to save you tons of time and questions because you're working with Car Concierge, and they're going to search, find, negotiate, and ultimately deliver your dream car directly to you without you having to step foot in a car dealership. Okay? So visit their website at gocarconcierge.com. It's right down in the show notes, or you can give them a call at 612-662-7788 to get started today. Thanks for listening to the podcast. Like, subscribe, share, all of that good stuff. New episodes every single Wednesday. I'm Grant. Thank you. Bye.